Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the topic of unwanted. How do we feel we are not wanted in the world? How do we feel as if we are being pushed around, stomped on, not seen, not heard, not feeling loved, cared for, or even feel like this earth is the place we should be? Now in the year 2019, so many people are saying that's how they feel in some form. However, if we can go back many decades, people that were raised in 1940, 50, and 60s definitely knew a lot of this was going on in their lives, as we were post-war, and many times there was a lot of drugs, there was a lot of abuse, there was a lot of violence, and it played out in the home just as well as it did on the streets. And then we started to see, were the children that were born at that time feeling unwanted and uncared for? How can people who were experiencing so many hardships in their heart and soul at that time of life be able to nurture another soul and heart? How can we change this going through society and see over decades how now we are coming to the point where we are accepting all souls and all hearts unconditionally? Is this our true path, and have we arrived? My guest today is Linda Smith. Her book is Unwanted: How a Mother Learned to Turn Shame, Grief, and Fear into Purpose, Passion, and Empowerment. Linda, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I think, Linda, I work a lot with elders, and I'm in my 60s myself, but what I find is a lot of these stories that may have been kept away in shoeboxes and stories of secrets are now really taking people and really hurting their hearts even more, because they really want to share them. However, they really have a hard time doing that. Are you finding that?
I always accepted the issues that happened to me as a child, you know, growing up in an abusive family. And I'm able to say many, many, many years ago that my father was a pervert. And I think once you face these things, there's two things that happen. One, you can just like feel sorry for yourself the rest of your life and blame your childhood and those things that happen on your childhood and your upbringing, and you just kind of live a miserable life. Or you can pick up and decide, you know, that's not me, that's not my life, that's something that happened in my life. And maybe sometimes these things happen for a reason, and certainly things can happen that can change your life in a positive way. And so the path that I took was one to not be that poor kid that was abused, but to be a strong and powerful individual. And then along the way, I had many setbacks that the book talks about with the birth of my disabled child. But generally, I've always been one to say, you know, that's not my lot in life.
Don't you think at the time when you're going through the experience, just as many are now, we will say we can't have that outlook, so to speak. However, we definitely can have it in retrospect.
Yeah. It's fair enough to have. I mean, we're all separate and unique human beings. But, you know, I find myself, I don't think I could ever be a doctor. I find myself unsympathetic many times when I sit with friends or people and they're just talking about their miserable life, and I just want to grab them by the shoulders and say, look around you. Look at the world. Look at everything that we have. to partake in. And, you know, I'm just generally a cup half brimming over type of an individual. So it's hard for me to answer that question.
But I think also, too, now at this time of the decade we're in, we truly are finding that many that have experiences such as yours and myself, some similar aspects, what we're finding is that we were truly the leaders that we're meant to be. In other words, we can say, yeah, you know, get up, get moving. So what? It was just something, you know, we got it. We felt it. We heard it. We danced with it. And now we like close the book and we're moved on to the next chapter, the next phase or whatever, and keep moving forward. I think definitely we were put on this earth for that purpose, to be able to face through these things so that we could carry stronger things in our life. As the birth of your child, you know, that was something stronger to carry. You would take that and turn that into a glorious life for you both, yes?
Yeah, I do think, too, that the maturity, and maybe because we are closer to that, the greatest generation folks that came before us who
right.
to overcome unimaginable horrors with, you know, you just watch the world wars and people in trenches and mm-hmm. just what people had to overcome and cities being bombed. And in our lifetime, we didn't have to deal with that because the people that came before us did it for us and sacrificed mm-hmm. so much for us. And then, you know, I look at now, is that what we're supposed to be doing, is sacrificing ourselves for that next generation? But my concern is that next generation is not prepared because they have everything so easy. They don't they have not largely experienced everything that we have experienced in our lives.
Right.
You know, not so long ago, people were being shoved in ovens and exterminated, and
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, I worry about the younger generation, and are they ready to face hardships, and what will they do? Will they cave in, or will they pick up and get going?
Yes, it definitely, we can see, you know, as you and I, looking back on all the decades, I think we could see so many different things. Because really, it definitely, I see that in the younger generation also. They're like, well, you know, what do you mean I have to do it? Isn't it supposed to be done for me? Or, you know, or, oh, well, you know, it'll be taken care of. And they have so many expectations of not almost like their presence in the world right now, that they're part of it and how it constructs and forms, you know? And
right.
they really, almost to the idea of, you know, if you look back, you know, we used to throw trash when highways were first constructed. People in fast food, people would throw their trash out in the highway, and then they started to put signs up, don't litter, you know? Now
right.
we would never think about throwing trash out on the street. However,
right.
so that's a very similar existence. That what are the kids experiencing now, and how are they going to take that forward? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly a different world. I almost would not want to be born into what
mm-hmm.
the kids have to face and deal with right now. We just hope that younger generations can help solve societal issues that we're dealing with today, so that they can then go forward and prepare the next generation. Your analogy is true. It's horrific to think about, you know,
right.
we just threw trash on highways. What were we thinking? You know, what
right.
were we thinking? Were we not thinking? So
yeah.
we certainly aren't perfect ourselves.
Yeah, I think also, too, let's talk about the idea of shame, guilt, and grief. And, you know, we've all had a dose of that. We've all sat in it and wore it, you know, as our cloak for many decades, you know, being born in the 1900s. And we look at it and we say, we'll be able to shed it. But definitely, as you said, you've had many times in your life, too, where it showed up again. Don't you think it didn't show up so you can keep falling down and backward? It kept showing up so you could take each lesson from it and keep going forward.
You know, I'm not sure. I think a lot about that. Like, was it predetermined? You know, was it meant to be? I tend to feel like maybe, you know, my childhood and my child were given to me so that I could teach the world and so that I could do the things that I have been able to do and accomplish.
Right.
But then maybe, you know, just life stuff that happens, the crap that happens, just prepares you for the next crappy thing that's going to happen. I really don't know. I question a lot. I know that one day when I get to sit down with God, we're going to have a real talk, you know. No, really. I have a lot of questions.
Do you think that when you shared in your book, again, the book is Unwanted, about how you grew up and you really truly felt unwanted, when your child was born, did you also, too, feel like society didn't want either one of you then?
It was actually proven to me with my son, who was born with Down syndrome, and in a very unique situation because I lived in Las Vegas. I was a very successful entertainer, Canadian entertainer, that moved to Las Vegas with an entertainer. We lived a great life in the United States. And then my then husband had a job in Canada around the due date of my son. And so the decision was made for me to jump on a plane, go to Toronto, and get squared away with a doctor there so that I could give birth and my husband would be there. I never thought about crossing borders. And back then, you didn't just really think about any issues, immigration issues. So I flew to Toronto, went into labor on the plane. The plane was going to be diverted to Chicago because I was in labor, but I begged to keep going to Toronto because I didn't know anyone in Chicago. And had the plane landed in Chicago, I would not have probably written a book because so much is around the incidents of Christopher being born in Canada. But anyway, 3 hours after the plane landed in Toronto, Christopher was born with Down syndrome and a lot of medical complications that come with it. And at the time, the doctors told me he wasn't going to live very long. I should forget about him and go on with my life. And this was just a fluke, and these things happen, and there's nothing wrong with you. I'm sure there's nothing wrong with your husband. And forget about this one and have another. And so he was basically deemed at birth a throwaway person. We were told by the medical team to just discard him. Like so much trash, and then continue, go have another one. And then once I overcame that feeling of looking at this baby and not wanting to have this child, I had this perfect vision of this beautiful child in mind, and here was this little guy who I was told was going to ruin my life. And then shortly after that, accepting him, the cute little guy, and he survived, but then 18 months later, went back to Las Vegas with him and traveled around the world and back in Toronto again for a job and crossing the border when Christopher was 18 years old to be turned back by an immigration official because Christopher didn't have his American papers that were in the process. And finding out at that time at the Canadian border 2 days before Christmas that our son fell into an exclusionary class of individuals by virtue of the fact that he was born with an intellectual disability. So that was a shock, and we absolutely could not get him in the country.
Has that law still in place today?
Yes. Folks with disabilities still fall into an exclusionary class of individuals. The rules have been relaxed somewhat, and certainly the language has changed. So, for example, the law at the time was spelled out to me by this border official with his big immigration book slammed in front of our cute little baby, said Section 212A of the Immigration Act in the United States says that people exempt from entering the United States as permanent residents are, number one, criminals, number two, for retarded people. And
wow.
So that was the law in the books. And then when we looked at the Canadian laws, we got an immigration attorney and we went, you know, Canada wouldn't discriminate like that. And we looked at the Canadian laws that were written, and the Canadian law spelled out people exempt from entering Canada as permanent residents are, number one, morons, imbeciles, and idiots, and their families, number two, criminals. So that was the,
wow.
That was the language that had
yeah.
been held over forever and ever. So, you know, we fought. The language, because of Mike Christopher, changed. Certain things about the laws relaxed and changed. But it took me 18 years to get Chris legal in the United States.
So, in essence, then, was he considered a Canadian resident at
yes.
birth?
He was. Now, if he had been born normal,
mm-hmm.
he would have just immigrated. Like with us, we were American at that point.
Right.
And so any normal child, that's like a, nothing, you know, sign a few papers and you're in. When your child is born with a profound intellectual disability, that's a whole new can of worms.
Wow.
Yeah. And so with Chris, because we were entertainers and had a lot of friends in show business, as a matter of fact, my ex-husband had appeared on the Johnny Carson show, and Carson had written a letter for us. We had friends, I don't know if you know, Wayne Newton
mm-hmm.
is actually, he's a close friend, and he's the godfather of my second son, Jason, and he tried to help us. Governors tried to help us, you know, politicians, everyone. We eventually got Vice President Hubert Humphrey to be Christopher's sponsor. And so with a sponsor, we were able to bring Chris into the country for 6 months at a time. And so we actually did that until Christopher, at age 7, was going to school in Las Vegas. We had a sponsor. You know, we would take Chris out of the country every 6 months, bring him back in. With our sponsor, as we were working on changing the laws and get him permanently legal, Vice President Hubert Humphrey died when Chris was 7. So then we were faced with being told to get Chris out of the country now. And we knew that once we took him out of the country, that we would be fighting the same fight because not much had changed. And so we didn't take him out of the country. And, you know, we harbored an illegal alien in our home
mm-hmm.
As we were fighting for him. And as I was changed my career from an entertainer to a disability advocate and a fundraiser. And so here I was in Las Vegas raising hundreds of millions of dollars for the cause of people with disabilities across the country, mostly in Las Vegas. And yet my son was hidden.
Mm.
Yeah. Crazy story.
And when did it actually, at what age did he finally be able to have all this change for him? Or is it still a fight?
Well, yeah, only actually because of, Jeanette, by the way, are you Dr. Jeanette?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Do you mind me calling you Jeanette?
That's fine. It's okay.
Okay. Oh, doctor. I was a disability advocate, and I traveled a lot speaking to groups. Not often on this subject. That was sort of a quiet movement going on because I didn't want to disrupt the life that we had for Christopher. I didn't want him to be thrown out of the country, and that meant that we would be going with him because he was a treasured and beloved member of our family. So I would speak to groups across the country about how to fundraise and about disability. And I had, when Chris was 17. Once Chris turned 18, we would never get him legal because at age 18, the Immigration Act requires you to be able to cite passages of immigration, information, about the history and geography. You need to know those things to become a citizen. So Chris would never comprehend that. So it was this desperate fight to get him legal before he turned 18. So at 17 and a half years of age for Chris, I was a speaker in Washington, D.C. at a disability conference, and I had arrived late, and I missed the plenary session. I missed everything because of weather, and I was a speaker the next day, and the dinner was underway, and I wasn't going to go to that dinner. I was just bedraggled from my flight, feeling sorry for myself, and something was telling me, go to that thing, at least make an appearance at the dinner. And I threw my stuff into my room and tried to change into wrinkly clothes and walked down to the dinner. And there were 2,000, there were 1,800 people sitting down to dinner. And in this loud room, a smoke-filled room back then, this was a long time ago. And I walked in and I saw there were no seats anywhere. And I was almost relieved. And I turned to go back to my room and somebody, a waiter, turned around and said, oh, someone's motioning to you over there. And I looked across the room, and in the middle of the room, someone was waving a hand. They spotted me, and they were waving the hand. There's one seat here. So I made my way through the room to the middle of the room to where this woman was waving her hand, and I sat down, and it was loud, and people were shouting introductions, and I thanked her. And then I said, flew in from Las Vegas, flight was late, and then a woman across the table said, you're kidding. She says, I'm from Reno, Nevada. And she said, you're the speaker. You're a speaker tomorrow. And I said, yes. And she said, oh, that's fantastic. And people were just listening and, shouting introductions. And then she said, whoa, wait a minute. Did you ever get your son that immigration issue solved? And I shouted across, because I was in good company, I shouted across the table, no, I've been harboring an illegal alien in my home for 18 years. And the guy sitting next to me turned around and said, what did you say? Mm-hmm. And so I quickly told him the story. It turned out to be the head of immigration and naturalization. He was attending this disability conference because he had married an Asian woman who had a disabled child. And so here was a guy that could have had me thrown out of the country, who instead listened to my story, met with me the next day, took my case, took all of the mounds of paperwork, and helped me get Chris legal in the United States. And so a month prior to Christopher's 18th birthday, he became a legal resident of the United States on stage at the Hilton Hotel with the Follies Bergère, the Everly Brothers, Wayne Newton, and two U.S. senators. You can imagine it's quite a cinematic story. There's been some expressed in a movie about the story.
And that's actually, don't you think, in a way, as you've had your life, you may have had all the struggles, but there were certain people put in place that were going to support you. In other words, you were out to support his life, but weren't you also, too, creating how support systems can be for people? Isn't that really what the whole purpose is?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yes, I guess. Because right now, you and I wouldn't be talking. I'd just be an old dancer. And instead, because of the journey that my Christopher set out for me and because of the life that I lived as a youngster and overcoming adversity, I've been able to raise almost $1 billion for charity, $500 million or more for disability causes. And so Yeah. You know, when they say things happen for a reason, I have to agree. In the right place at the right time, is it fate? Is it preordained? Not positive. It's beginning to look like it.
But also, too, I mean, your son, his birth, truly was almost like a resurrection for your soul. You know, that's how I see it. As, you know, you really both needed each other to be able to walk this earth. And, you know, he was saying, you know, come on, I'm going to help you do this. And you're saying, come on, I'm going to help you do this. And while the, you know, the paths may seem a little bit different, like they were still a soul journey. I mean, so in essence, I think when something comes up and it's really taking you to your core, it's almost truly about this is your life purpose. And you really take it on unconditionally, yes?
Yes. I love your resurrection for your soul. that's lovely, and thank you for that. I guess so.
Don't you think also, too, that really the idea that when you were really helping him all along the way, I mean, just as you said, we said in the beginning of this conversation, how would the children these days, you know, that are coming into the world be able to handle issues that come up? I almost don't think that kids these days have any concept or clue about what you're even speaking about, you know, crossing borders and stuff like that. They're kind of like they believe that the world exists around them and everything will work out fine. Or even the concept that a child with a disability would even not even be cared for by society or by parents or by other people, or there would be shunning involved or not even a place for them to be so many decades ago, when now we see it all over social media that they're really celebrated. It's almost like, it almost feels like you're living in this, like, story or this movie, and you're saying, I'm kind of missing the point. Where is all this stuff going? And that was my world. This wasn't. How is that working out? And it's almost like it's disheveled, the path. What
yeah. I agree. You know, I look at folks with disabilities who, you know, when I mentioned earlier people were shoved into ovens, they were the very first people. That were, and they, you know, my Chris, who I recently lost, by the way, just a couple of months ago, and he's my heart and my soul, and I continue down the path that he laid out for me, but I, you know, I see kids like my Chris who really, I call them sort of the worthy poor, that, you know, they're born without the ability to do the things that we're capable of doing. You know, I always said he would never grow to up and become a doctor or an attorney or, maybe a lawyer. But he would never do these things or never buy me a home, you know, and look after his old mom. But what he would do is teach valuable lessons in you know, in unconditional love. And this is not a guy that's going to choose to snort cocaine up his nose. And none of the people that I've ever met would you know, take to these types of choices that are thrown out there for people. They were born with the hand that was dealt to them. They're the bravest souls and the most misunderstood and most neglected in human history. And so I think they bring great value, but it's because of parents fighting so hard for our kids right now. But they're still, you know, if you read the immigration laws right now, and I understand, absolutely understand the need for borders. I totally understand it. But once again, that population has been thrown back into an even more exclusionary category.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Linda, also, too, you know, I wrote in my book, and I'm sorry, I wrote in your book, the book is Unwanted. I wrote in the front, all God's souls are angels and all angels are miracles. And I truly think that what you really had was, Your son really knew his purpose. His purpose was to be a miracle because he was an angel and he was born as a soul on this earth. And I think when we look at that and we say, are these people put in our place to really institute change in the world, to really institute change in opening hearts? Hold on.
Perhaps because they certainly do that. Mm-hmm. If people open their hearts to them, and and my experience in life is to watch people and encountering a person who looks different from us or is acting strangely, people mm-hmm. tend to see the disability before they see the person. And
right.
you know, if you open your heart, we're all humans. We're all part of the human race. And if we can just open our hearts to those people who don't seem to fit the norm and who look different from us, you know, when you get, I don't know, you know, you're driving down the street and you see some beggar on the street and you just kind of avert your eyes. And mm-hmm. we don't know that life that that person's had that has led them to be this person standing on the corner of a street. Who would choose a life like that? And certainly, if the person has a mental illness, then a lot of times they choose that life because, you know, they don't know how to live any other way. And so we have to be more empathetic. And I think that, yes, we can learn from these special souls around us, the angels that I say who walk amongst us every day, if we would open our hearts to them.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we turn around and we always see people, and we're always looking at their outside shell. Sorry. Hold on. We look at people and we always see their outside shell, and we always want to believe, do they validate us? Do they look similar to us? And whether or not we will accept them. And we use that as our quantifier. But however, if we can look at people, I've been in a medium like forever my entire life. And when I look at people, I don't see their outside shell. I don't see, are they male or female, rich or poor or whatever. I don't see that. I see inside of them. And I think if we can truly start to see inside of people, irregardless of all the outside stuff, isn't that the path that your son was really trying to share with you, how to see that going forward?
Yes, certainly. Again, you would not be talking to me, and I would be some self-absorbed old entertainer. And so, yes, he definitely, his life has brought value to my life, and through me, I've been able to reach many people, and teach many people, and open many people's eyes, and including, you know, on your show, hopefully.
Right. Well, Linda, can you share what do you believe that you will see going forward? Because you really, I think, you know, as we always put it out there, you would like to see going forward changes in laws. You would like to see how people could unconditionally be able to accept everyone, but also to the idea that everyone has a struggle and we're all worthy. Yes?
Yes. Yeah. We all, I mean, I tell people constantly, you know, when you sit down in a plane and you're scrunched into those seats,
right.
Start a conversation with the person next to you. You know, you're feeling grouchy. Just turn around and look around. You might find people have it way worse than you do. And, you know, if you have a conversation with that person sitting next to me, you might gain so much and you might learn so much, or you might be able to help that individual. And so we tend to close in on ourselves. And, you know, we just need to open our hearts also to others.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge these days, especially when we see so much on social media, right?
Well, yeah, and you're sitting, no one knows how to talk to anyone anymore. I mean, everybody, no matter where you are, people are face down in their phones.
Right.
And you're almost afraid to... If you sit down on an airplane, for example, and someone's engrossed in their, you know, in their phone, are they sending you a message that they don't want to talk? And
right.
You know, so I would say to that,
say hello anyway, or be friendly, or make the attempt.
In closing, Linda, I did want to touch on this also, too, when you share about, you know, speaking to other people. It's also, too, about being able to share and talk to young kids, anybody maybe under the age of 21 at these days, because just as you and I have gone through all of this stuff in our early childhood, by no means is that gone away. By no means has that phased out. It is still pervasive in society at this time. So if you're speaking to a child, you might get an inkling that that child is not feeling cared for, or they're being protected or supported, or in a very healthful home situation. I think it's truly about being able to reach everyone, no matter what their age. Yes.
Yes, and sadly, it's so difficult for children right now, because they really I think it's really tough for kids, and they do not have the communication ability that we have just to speak out. You know, they're
right.
communicating through the internet, and you know, there's a terrible crisis in the world with kids taking to opioids, and I mean, I just heard a statistic the other day, 200 kids a day take their own life due to opioid addiction.
Mm-hmm.
These are kids. They feel bullied. I mean, it seems like every kid feels bullied, whether you're pretty or not pretty. It's so easy to bully someone just with one, you know, press of
right.
your finger. So what is the answer to all of this? I don't know. I've often dreamt that if we could, there's a movement in the schools called the Best Buddy System, where young kids buddy up with a person with a disability. Programs like that in school are so valuable, not just for the disabled buddy to have a friend, but for that friend to learn from the buddy about what it's like to really overcome
mm-hmm.
obstacles.
Right. But also, too, I think we say it as disabilities, but also, too, there's disabilities that are inside that you don't see. It could be being not able to be communicated. There's also social disabilities, you know, abuse, violence, addiction, those things in the homes. So I think there's a lot of times when we say, how can we help them? And I think truly it's just about reaching out, yes?
Yes, yes. Reach out, open your heart, and be there in the moment for as many people as you can.
Yeah. I'll tell you, you know, it's we would so wish that what we had to go through would be exterminated from the earth, but it hasn't yet, right?
Right. That's right. We have a long
yeah.
way to go as humans.
Absolutely. Well, Linda, it was a pleasure to have you with us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your work? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, my website, hello at Linda's, my email is hello at lindaslife.com. My website is Linda's Life. My book, Unwanted, can be purchased on Amazon, online at Amazon, also on my website, Barnes & Noble, you know, all of the online. And 100% of the proceeds from the sale of my book go to the foundation that I started for my son Christopher, named the Christopher Smith Foundation, and that foundation will reward caregivers and families who care for the most disabled and chronically ill folks. So his work continues through the Christopher Smith Foundation and through my book sales.
Well, Linda, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today, because I think it's truly about speaking up and speaking forward, and that's what we try to do every day, so I thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Linda Smith, again, her book is Unwanted, How a Mother Learned to Turn Shame, Grief, and Fear into Purpose, Passion, and Empowerment, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page to go directly to her website for more information. And truly, you know not what anyone has experienced on the inside nor on the outside. Just reach out and communicate and see where their heart and soul is in alignment. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.